And we're back. Happy Ballistic Missile Day.
January 13th. For people in the mainland know about this, right? Because they made fun of this in mainland circuits. American Horror Story made fun of this.
The ballistic missile alert. The new season?
The Doomsday season.
Wow.
The opening scene was like, oh, is this another Hawaii thing? And then they got the missile alert and those actual...
I didn't see that.
If you ever watch American Horror Story...
I stopped after the carnival season. I was over it by that point. But
I only watched it because I heard they made fun of Hawaii. And they did. It was like, oh, wow. Because it was actually a nuclear bomb that blew up. It was the Doomsday season, right?
Right.
They showed the ballistic missile alert text. And then they made fun of Hawaii. So I was like, oh, okay. And then that... That's how we start this show.
Yeah.
Ballistic missile alerts.
What, you know what? You know what was really blowing up? 90s hip hop.
Oh, fuck. Yep. This show's got great segues, don't it?
I'm gonna just keep coming with the terrible segues, everyone. It's my thing, man.
You're on a streak.
I'm on a roll.
So what are we doing?
Well, yeah, welcome back, man. So, we're on episode 7 of our deep dive into 1994 hip-hop. And we're going to be covering two subjects. We're going to be covering sophomore successes and slumps. And we're also going to be doing another treasure or trash segment.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. So, obviously, we're starting off with one of the most beloved duos in hip-hop. With our first segment of sophomore success or slump. It's the main ingredient from Pete Rock and CL Smooth. It was released October 8th, 1994 on Elektra Records. It's the second and final album of the Mount Vernon New York duo, Peter Phillips, a.k.a. Pete Rock, and Corey Penn, a.k.a. CL Smooth. Were you anticipating this album upon release?
Yes.
They were the major duo, East Coast duo. I mean,
major duo. This was a big single that came out that got everybody. I don't know about everybody on Hawaii. There's like
got people excited,
but people excited. People that know of these people. Great album cover.
Oh yeah, love it.
Great album cover by them.
Great marketing
and
their ads look really, really like great photography. Right?
Great photography, like, very soulful.
Whoever was putting together their advertising and marketing for this album was really smart.
Yeah.
It looked really slick.
And that was a time in 1994 going into 95 where they brought back like the vintage 70s style photography.
Yeah.
Imagery.
Everything was warm tones.
Warm tones.
Yeah, it was tan, like this kind of beige-ish, tan, brownish tones.
Like Brand Nubian did that.
Earth tones, yeah.
That Everything is Everything album.
Right.
That was 95.
Yeah,
right?
It kind of was the style back then. Brand new heavies.
Right.
Was doing that. Yeah, retro was coming back. This
the retro
look.
70s retro style.
70s retro look.
For 94. Mm-hmm. So that imagery-wise was great. A lot. I have to say that I enjoy this album more than the first one.
So that's what I was going to ask you. You actually beat me to it. So this was an album that, you know, it didn't do very well, you know, at sales-wise. Well, and I think people are going back to it and rediscovering it and actually discovering how good it is and how much of a more tighter, cohesive album it is than Mech and the Soul Brother. Mech and the Soul Brother is a much longer album. It has, to me, a little bit more filler. It's still a classic, no doubt. Yeah. But this is a tight album. This is a tighter album.
It was a little bit more dated, Mecca and the Soul Brother. Like, I would listen to this in the car. I'll get right to it. I'll listen to this in the car still.
Right.
I enjoy this album. This album is fun. This album is produced very well.
Oh, yeah.
CL Smooth has a great voice. Not so much Pete Rock in this one as the first one, but CL holds true.
Do you feel CL Smooth is one of the most underrated rappers of the 90s? Because this is a guy that, you know, did these two albums that are considered kind of iconic albums in the hip-hop genre, right?
Yeah.
Mech and Soul Brother, Main Ingredient. We can even count All Souls Out, All Sold Out, the EP with the creator, because that was a classic, you know? But do you feel like CL Smooth didn't get his due as far as respect in the...
Nobody mentions him.
Nobody talks about him.
No. I think it's because he's got Pete Rock labeled next to him.
Yeah.
Where people don't realize
that he lives
him.
Under the shadow of of Pete Rock.
Yes. He wasn't very message driven. He wasn't very articulate like a Nas. he was party style rapping.
He loved to talk to the ladies.
Right, and he was that smooth ladies man talker.
He loved the caramel skin. He would always mention the caramel skin. He always loved the luscious lips. He would always.
Well, he lives by his name. He's CL Smooth. He is smooth.
Fantastic voice.
Right.
Great.
It's unique voice.
Yes.
And he has a lot of pluses. It's just he just never got the push off after they broke up. That was the end for him.
Right.
He had solo stuff.
Right.
They came back for a little bit, but this was it.
They never really did a full album. This was the last final album. He shows up on Pete Rock's Pete Strumentals on one track. He shows up on Soul Survivor 1 and 2.
Yes.
You know, they maybe released a couple of maxi singles.
They did some singles.
Maybe an EP, but nothing that solidified them as back together.
It never came to fruition because Pete Rock got bigger and bigger, and he just became the producer. He didn't need a group anymore.
Right.
And off it went, and that was it.
Because by the time Pete Rock was doing Soul Survivor and Pete Strumentals, you know, he's already in the conversation of top five hip-hop producers of all time.
Yeah.
And CL is just kind of left in the dust.
He's the sidekick kind of guy. I don't know what to call
him. I think CL Smooth released the solo album in, like, the mid-2000s.
Right.
And it's not terrible. It's not,
but it's not what we want.
It's not. I don't think it was fitting for the time of what hip hop fans were looking for.
It's comparable to J.Ru. Once J.Ru left Premiere,
that was it.
That's the end.
The magic's gone.
It's out. Right.
This is like post Dr. Dre artists trying to be a success without Dre.
Exactly. Once it's the electricity's out of the bottle, that's it. And they can't recover. It's just a thing because we all know of them as this stigma. We know him as with Pete Rock. We know J.Ru's with the Premier.
Right. And we're not talking about Eminem and Snoop when we're talking about Dre. I mean, those guys, obviously, they were their own entities. But we're talking about guys like Lady of Rage and RBX and all these guys that Dre, you know, and all the aftermath of the aftermath artists, right? Like all those guys. Those guys, right?
That's it.
Nocturnal and all these other guys that he had
Group
signed.
Home.
Right.
They can't last the without Premier. Any of those guys. So that's just the thing. It's sad to say. And it's sad that they broke up not too long after this album.
Yeah.
Classics on this album. Like these two songs were the singles.
Yeah.
And they were the weakest songs of the album.
Yeah. It's I just strange. Played them because they were the singles.
Right.
But I have a couple of my personal favorites. Do you have a personal favorite on the album?
Caramel City is my
Caramel
favorite.
Caramel City is awesome. All right, let's play that.
Just for it really sets the mood of what his voice sounds like.
And I like that Pete Rock actually took a little bit more chances with production on this rather than what he was known for with Mecca and the Soul Brother. It was always horns. His bass line and drums were kind of somewhat similar.
Right.
And this is an album he, you know, like for my favorites, it's like In the House, In the Flesh, and
Great Songs.
Get on the Mic. Like those are fantastic songs. And I agree with you. Take You There and I Gotta Love. They're slick songs, but they're not the best songs on the album.
He was his attempts at radio play. Get it? It's fine. But
I Gotta Love was hot though.
Well, it was.
You could play that in the club, right?
Well, because they use that familiar beat that's from the I Dream a Genie.
Right.
So I get it. He was trying to be more mainstream and try to get the radio play. But if you remember, Pete Rock and CL got radio play from doing a song about a guy who died. Mm. So he didn't really need to go there. People love They Reminisce Over You.
Mr. Cheeks made a remake of it. I mean, there's Lupe Fiasco sampled that same beat.
They love that
all these
song.
Guys, they keep going back to that beat.
So it's interesting how he decided to go. So here's the thing with Pete Rock. So he makes a single that's a hit. Well, he had the creator, but then They Reminisce was the one that hit.
I mean, it was huge.
And it was a dramatic song. It was about a guy, you know, who'd passed away.
T-Roy, Trouble T-Roy of
it was
heavy,
a sad
heavy
song.
D and the Boys, right?
But it was very emotional, and he drew out the emotion, which then led to probably him evolving to this, Caramel City. Because this is a very 94 vibe-ish. We talked about the vibe of 94.
Yeah, this is like pre-Dilla Dilla in a way.
Foreign Exchange, Little Brother, they're listening to this. Right, I and I, they're listening to this.
Right.
So then you got that vibe. But then on the other end, Pete Rock decides to go from They Reminisce, which is a vibey, emotional song, to I Gotta Love. So it's interesting how he took the radio song and made it that, where the rest of the album, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I hear you.
He went party for the radio song, where the rest of the album was this.
And you remember the music video, right? They're on the beach and...
Yeah, everybody's shirtless.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're in Jamaica, right? Were they in Jamaica or something?
Something like that. I think
so
it was.
You gotta take the shirt off.
Caribbean. It was Caribbean vibes.
It's hot.
For sure.
I get it.
Yeah.
But Pete Rock, I think, is DJing naked. Or it's not naked.
I think the Take You There video was like they were in like a room and it was like a club vibe and they're all dancing and it's got the R&B hook.
They're playing off of CL's voice.
Right.
The vibe of the Pete Rock and CL, if you're a person that doesn't know them, is like, okay, there's these smooth brothers,
right,
ladies, man, appealing to women.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to appeal to women.
Yeah.
So I get it. And I think that's what a lot of the marketing was trying to get a female. Trying to get a female artist.
This is where I think CL, if you know, once he had broke away from Pete Rock, you know, he could have went the R&B hook rapper vibe and probably got some hits, but like maybe it's not what he wanted. Maybe
who knows what was going through his mind at that point.
But they released three singles. It was I Gotta Love, it was Take You There, and Searching, which
right.
I thought was.
Right.
Did you hear the Searching remix?
Yeah.
I think the Searching remix blows away the original.
Usually when a third single comes out of an album, that's where you're going to see it dramatically remixed and for the better
right.
and for like a more evolved sound. So you clearly saw that's where Pete Rock was at that point because Searching came out much later in 95.
Yeah.
Right. You can just see a lot of evolution of what he was trying to do. He was trying to go different route with the production overall.
Mm-hmm.
And then... People that know, we're going to talk about Helter Skelter 95.
Yeah.
That's the beat. People know. What was that? Let Your Brains Blow, right?
Yeah, Let Your Brains Blow.
But that's the Pete Rock, solidified Pete Rock vibe.
Do you feel this is the Searching remix.
Yeah.
But do you feel that this is kind of still on the uptake of Pete Rock's career? Is this pinnacle of Pete Rock's career? Or do you feel he gets better with like Soul Survivor and his solo projects and Pete's Tremendous?
I didn't like Soul Survivor.
Okay. He's trying too much.
Okay. And it's him and his attempt to stay relevant. Because
like, let's get all the hottest MCs on one album.
Try it out.
And you just thought it was too much.
Because at the time when Soul Survivor came out, he was battling not only hip-hop being more mainstream now.
Right.
He was battling the independent scene where you
That's
got
true.
A new single coming out every day from a million different guys.
Yeah.
You have all these independent raucous records, Stone records, all these
hot.
How is he going to stay relevant? Is a bigger jungle now than it was now.
Yeah.
So he had to do it again.
Did he release that on Loud Records? I forgot. No, it wasn't Loud. It was. I forgot what label it was on, but that's fine.
No, it had to have been Loud, right?
I thought it was Loud.
Because wasn't the single True Master?
Yeah, because he had Wu-Tang on it, right? He had Inspector Deck.
Corrupt on it.
Corrupt.
CL.
Right.
I think it was Loud. I'm pretty sure, because he had every song.
I don't remember
right?
off the head, but.
So you have that, and it's just him attempting to hold on. This is kind of the peak right here. 95 Pete
right.
Rock.
So this is career apex for you, is main ingredient for
oh,
you
yeah.
as far as his production goes.
Because, once again, name Pete Rock classics that are past the year 1999. Can anyone?
DM us if you have any Pete Rock
oh, yeah. Can't wait
classics.
For yeah. Go email him.
For me, it's the remixes. I mean, but even like you're saying, post-96, the Pete Rock remix wasn't that sought out.
No.
You know,
he got lost
it
in the shuffle.
Sought after. You
right.
know, it was the premiere remix that everybody wanted.
Premiere remix was still hanging in there for 97.
Right.
right. It was the Bad Boy remix that was the hot remix, obviously. But
so the album only features really one guest star. Can do you, pop quiz?
It's gotta be like Rap Lover.
I and I. Who's the other I and I rapper?
Rabo.
Rabo. It was Rabo on Worldwide. That's right.
All
right. Well, last question I got for you. Where does Pete Rock rank for you in hip hop producers? Top 5, top 10, top 20? Where is he in for you personally?
I'll still keep him in the top 5. I'll still keep him in the top
he's in
five.
He's in my top five.
Just for historical value, and you know the stuff you grew up with the best.
Right.
And I grew up to this.
But he should be in, I mean, he's an icon. You know,
he's not top three.
He's influenced so many people. I mean, but would we have a Dilla without Pete Rock? I mean.
Oh, no, we wouldn't have a lot without Pete Rock.
You know,
but he created this entire vibe.
I think him and Q-Tip are two of the most influential producers, and Premier, of course, but
yeah,
I mean, Q-Tip influenced a generation of sound.
Right.
I mean,
Q-Tip
doesn't get his due.
And then you gotta look too, though, when you say generation of sound, right? If you were a person that grew up to Dre and mm-hmm. grew up to the Bay Area music, you will probably disagree with that statement because you may not just be feeling the Q-Tips, the Pete Rocks.
Right.
You're gonna be feeling E-40, and you're gonna be feeling the Bay Area, and you're gonna be feeling the West Coast. So it's a different iconic for a different person. So I don't know if you're a make a top five all-time producers list, it's going to always be different. Everybody's not going to agree with it, obviously. But
right.
So it comes down to what you grew up on. What did you grow up on as a kid?
Mm.
We were the odd ones because we listened to both sides. We listened to the West and the East, and we just listened to whatever we could grab. Right. But if you're a kid that grew up literally in Oakland.
Yeah, we had no regionality loyalty because Hawaii, we were in this.
Right.
You know, we were in this, like, way out West Plains. Yeah. So.
And then plus, there was no beef before. There was no West Coast, East Coast thing, too.
Yeah.
That didn't start till a little bit later.
And I didn't really meet too many people growing up that were like, I'm strictly East Coast, strictly
well, exactly,
West Coast.
Right.
Here.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're just buying it up, whatever comes
right.
out. So if you lived in Oakland, would Q-Tip be an influential guy to you? Would Pete Rock even matter to you? When you just listen to RBL Posse all day?
Yeah.
So I don't know what you would say to that guy. So when we say, like, iconic guys, it's going to be always such a subjective list. Always. So you and
well,
I would
point.
Put Pete Rock in 5, but then you'd have a guy that probably would not put Pete Rock in 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
Good point.
It's an odd... When we label these guys legend or non-legend. Because if you look
right.
at Pete Rock, too, he might not be even legendary because what has he done since 1999?
He's never stopped working.
He's never stopped
working. He just put out a new album with Smoke Dizza. I mean, the guy, he's put out that album with Smith & Wesson back in 2011.
I mean,
granted, these are all, like, catering to the nostalgic ears.
Exactly.
But Pete Rock's never not worked.
He didn't retire. It's just that this album is in 1994. We're in the year 2021.
Right.
It's a lot of years that have passed, you know? And that's what you got to look at, too.
I think one of these days we need to have a conversation of whose sound in hip-hop has the most longevity as far as a producer goes.
That's a tough one.
We'll talk about that. How many mics did The Source give this album?
4.
Gave it 4 mics.
Yeah.
For you personally, mic rating back then, mic rating now in 2021.
I give this 4.5 both.
Yeah.
4.5 for both eras.
And just for reference, what do you give Mecca and the Soul Brother?
4.
And you give it that slight edge. You give Main Ingredient that slight half over edge.
2021, Mecca and the Soul Brother, I give it 3.5.
All right. So I think we can say both of us unanimously, this was a sophomore success.
Oh, yeah.
If you guys haven't heard this album, because the album did not sell really well.
No, this
and
bombed, right?
And actually, this is also one of the reasons why it led to them breaking up,
right.
was just the commercial failure of this album.
Well,
you know, I believe they were dropped from Elektra at this point, and, you know.
They ran it. See, this is a victim of timing situation.
Right.
Because you have them coming out. Second album, there's going to be a group of people that are going to be excited over it.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's going to be a group of people that only know the song, they reminisce over you.
Right.
And the creator. So then you're going to get those guys. Dramatically different than they reminisce over you or the creator.
Right.
So then you lose that fan base. And then you go in a different vibey route rather than the boom bappish horns that he did for Mecca. So if you're a person, I think we talked about this in the last episode. If you're a guy that likes that 93 sound and you didn't evolve with the next year being 94 with this sound,
right?
Are you still on board or not?
Mm.
Because every year the sound changes dramatically. Like the 93 sound to 94 sound changed dramatically.
Oh, we were in the most rapidly evolving era of hip hop.
Right. It cleaned itself up a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you don't hear the roughness of Mecca and the Soul Brothers' drums or the high trebles that you hear.
Yeah, it's cleaner, it's tighter.
Right.
I mean, that's what everybody almost aspired for, is a cleaner and tighter sound. Besides RZA, because RZA kind of was made, you know, he brought it back formula. To making it dirty, you know, like
right.
dirting it up. He goes, I want you to hear the skips and the pops and the.
Right, you know, and it worked for him. Yeah. Because, and it worked for their image, too. So it works. But if you have a smooth brother like CL Smooth coming out to like some RZA beats, it's not going to work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they went this route. They took a gamble. The gamble failed.
And artistically successful.
Right. Artistically successful, that doesn't lead to money. Critically acclaimed never makes money.
I think this rarely. I think we're gonna this will definitely come up a lot of times in the show. Is that yes? Trying to be artistically expressive doesn't always equal
don't make
to
money.
No money. Yeah, you ain't making that Drake money.
You gotta look at it. Do you want to make money or not? Do you want to be critically acclaimed or not? It's a fine line.
It's a fine line to get it both ways. Yeah.
You can't do it. You can have any artist. I'm telling you, it's not gonna work.
All right. Moving on to our next album. Solo guy out of New York, Puerto Rican Cuban rapper from Manhattan. His name is Curious George.
Yeah.
And we're going into our next segment, Treasure or Trash debut. And the album is A Constipated Monkey.
Yeah.
It was released January 18th, 1994 on Columbia Records. The debut album of Jorge Alvarez, a.k.a. Curious George, a.k.a. Curious.
So this guy, it's either you know him or you don't.
Yep.
In 94, it's either you know him or you don't.
He was a big guy for underground heads.
And how are you finding out this information? I don't know. There's no internet.
Nah, magazines.
So if you're an underground head in Hawaii, how do you know who this is?
It was magazines and it was this.
It's deep diving. It's deep diving.
And also a lot of word of mouth as far as, well, not, you can't say a lot of word of mouth here in Hawaii, but
right.
the few word of mouth you'd have with the couple other rap nerds you would chat with.
Right.
Walk Like a Duck came out in 92, if you remember.
Right.
And I don't know about you, but I liked Walk Like a Duck at the time.
Right.
Right. It's dated now, but Walk Like a Duck was hot at the time in 92. You know,
it
came out in 92.
That's
and
right.
And you were hyped for this guy. And you know who also talked him up a lot? Stretch and Bobbito.
He was on their show a lot.
He was on their show a lot.
Right.
And also, I think Bobbito's connection to him of both being Latin, you know, both being like, you know, like of that Latin descent.
Right.
I think Bobbito really wanted to big up a Latin rapper because the Stretch and Bobbito show was dominated by mainly black artists.
Right. So it's either you knew him or you didn't. And if you're in Hawaii, I don't know how many people in Hawaii knew who this guy was. You would associate him to Beat Nuts, I guess.
Yeah.
You would associate to that kind of style.
I don't know. You know where his first appearance was on any album? Do you remember?
Oh.
Oh.
Man. KMD?
Close, really close.
Oh, it was Pete Nice.
Pete Nice and Daddy Rich's right. Dust to Dust album. It was the Three Blind Mice song, remember?
Right.
Right. So it actually was Pete Nice and Bobbito Garcia that brought him to Columbia. And Columbia Records actually gave Bobbito his own like label imprint on Columbia Records, Hopeful Records. You remember this? H-O-P-P-O-H, Hoppo Records. I don't think a lot of people remember it because I don't think he had much come out. I think he had Curious and maybe one other project come out, and then I don't know if he ever made anything on this label again, you know? And Curious was very buzzed about in Rap Pages and The Source. I remember reading about him a lot.
They would, you know what, I come to think of it, yeah, he was in a lot of articles.
He was. They were propping him up as one of the guys to watch for.
Right.
You know?
So I guess if you look at that, he was in a lot of magazine stuff.
Right.
Because that's the only way you could find out about this guy. But I don't recall him on UMTV Raps talking.
No. I don't remember. Because I don't think he ever had, like, they would play this Uptown shit, and the video was Uptown Hit, right?
Right.
And
so
then,
I'm not sure.
And then he had the I'm Curious video, right? This was his crossover. This was like his crossover attempt kind of song, right? This was technically the second single from the album, but his third single, because Walk Like a Duck was released like way before the album came out.
They played the video for that several times. They played this a lot. People in Hawaii know this song. People are fans of this song, and just because of the production too, right? People know they know this beat. Also used by Paris, this beat.
That's right, Paris. Shout out Bay Area.
Days of
on
Old.
On Days
right?
of Way Back or Days of Old. Days of yeah, Old. Days of Old. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was executive produced by Bobito and Faith Newman of Nas fame that we talked about on the Nas show. And right. production was like Dante Ross and the Stimulated Dummies, Pete Nice and Daddy Rich, Bosco Money of Downtown Science, the Beatnuts. I mean, you know, it was like your typical East Coast kind of, right. you know. What'd you think of this album?
Very dated. And it's evident with the release date. It was released in January of 94. This yeah. is the last remnants of 1993.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the last of 93. So... Thus, that's why he had to come out with Mansion and a Yacht,
oh,
an updated
go.
Song.
That was the best song. That's arguably his best song, and it's not even on the album.
Nope. Because listen to Uptown Shit. I mean, that's clearly a dated song.
Now, for those of you guys that don't know about Mansion and a Yacht, this is definitely something you should check out on YouTube. The single's not available on iTunes or anything. It was actually a B-side on the I'm Curious vinyl and maxi single. And then they released a music video for it, which was crazy because you didn't really see a music video too often for a B-side.
Right.
But it features Sadat X and Mike G from the Jungle Brothers, right?
Yes. Yes, Jungle Brothers. Yes, Mike
yeah,
G.
Yeah, Jungle Brothers, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this song is a very underground.
I love this song.
Hip-hop. Purest song.
This is there's, if you know, you know song.
Yeah, there's no chorus here. This shouldn't be on the radio. This shouldn't be anywhere.
I'm but shocked there was a video. They only
made a
seen
video.
It once.
Only once. But they made a video. And
I didn't even see this on Yom T Raps because I don't think they ever played this on Yom T Raps. I saw it on a VHS tape that someone mailed back from the mainland that was taping Rap City. VET.
I'm trying to think if it was on Yom TV Raps or not.
I don't ever remember seeing this on Yom TV Raps.
Wow, I remember this video,
but
though.
You remember the video.
And it was a very grimy shot video.
Right.
Like, they were literally in the underground.
Right.
And it's just... This song is like, it's... If there's a song to solidify if you're a hip-hop nerd...
This is it.
It's this. Because this has no... historical value.
Yeah.
It's a good song. It's not a great song.
No, but it was a hidden gem, and if you were a rap nerd, you were like asking guys, oh, you got that Mansion and a Yacht? Because it was hard to find.
It was like something to one up somebody on.
Yeah, it was one up.
It would be like, oh, hi, fellow rap fan. Oh,
oh hey, you heard this Mansion and a Yacht?
Have you heard this song? Oh, no? Well, boy, I need to tell you. That's what this song is. That's basically it. The beat is catchy.
Right.
The chorus I could do out with. I don't like that call and response bullshit.
But Sadat X is hot. Sadat X is ripping on this song.
He was at the time. He was one of the hot MCs. Mike G makes a comeback here. Mike yeah. G, we always thought it was good, but he was just doing too much house music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Curious holds his own. So
I thought Curious just, you know, if this album didn't flop, it didn't do well. And then we wouldn't get another album from him for like, I don't know, 10 years or some crazy shit, right? Like, he never put anything else out. He appeared on MF Doom and, you know, like other stuff, but...
He was a street...
He's a strong MC, though. He can rhyme. He can really rhyme.
But he didn't have the next level to take him to the next...
Yeah, he didn't have the marketability. The appeal to go further.
He didn't have a look. He just didn't have all of that stuff that's needed to take yourself to the next...
All right, so you know, where does Curious rank for you in Latin rappers of the 90s, right? Big Pun,
wow,
Fat Joe, Noriega,
category.
Beatnuts, Chino XL, Immortal Technique.
He's got to be at the bottom because what is his catalog? What?
So he's along with like Tumex and stuff? Like
Curious is an urban legend. Curious is that guy that you're like, you think you think he's great and you
he's Candyman?
You'll remember him. Yeah, say Curious three times. Watch what happens.
Mansion
Mike G
and
will show
appears.
Up. Yeah, the single Mansion. Yeah, just the cassette just flies in here. It's a guy that you bring up to a fellow hip hop fan that's old.
Right.
It's only old people. You're gonna mention Curious, and then the thing to be like, oh yeah, yeah, I remember him. Yeah, oh yeah. And then you're gonna be like, and you're gonna think he's like, oh yeah, Curious was dope, right? Oh, Curious was great, right? He wasn't that great. He's an urban legend. He was the legend of Curious George. Where we think of him as some legend, where he has no backing to be called a legend. He's this street, he's got the street credibility. He's a guy that was a stretching Bobito. That's it. I mean, that's it. We're listening to this again?
Well,
do we need to?
No, it just deleted.
We just have silence.
It deleted my cue. But I was gonna play Walk Like a Duck, but we're not gonna stick around on this too much. Just so you feel like he never reached his potential, so he's sitting at the bottom for you for the 90s.
Yeah, what are we gonna say about him that's gonna make him some iconic thing? Like what is the evidence?
I just always thought that he's better than people remember him.
He's better than people remember him. Yes. Because I think people don't remember him.
Like, I'd rather listen to this than Funk Dubious.
Well, because Funk Dubious was forced. The Funk Dubious sound was forced. He wasn't forced. So, I'll take him over Funk Dubious. I'll take him over Son Doobie. But that's not saying much. Is that going to make Furious feel better about himself? Maybe he'll give me a pound.
But you'd rather listen to, like, a Chino XL or Immortal Technique?
Don't get me started on Chino XL.
Okay.
That's another. No. I would not.
Save that one for 95?
If I'm still alive in 95? Yeah.
All right. All right. No. What did The Source give this album?
3 mics.
They gave it 3.5.
What?
They gave it 3.5.
Come on. But then again, wait a minute. But then again, this is in January.
This is January.
So they got this album probably in December to review, probably. To put out in the magazine for probably the January, February.
Probably.
So
yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely right.
Living off the 93 sound.
They might even get it 2 months ahead. I mean, it takes the guys, probably, you know, to write it. So.
How long does it take to publish a magazine?
Treasure or trash in 2021?
Is this a trick question? I mean...
All right.
This is legendary? There's no one out there. There is no one out there that can say that this is a legendary album. There's no one that can say
A constipated monkey is.
Wow, that's great. That was great. Remember Curious? Wow, he's great. Yeah. Come on. He's good, but he doesn't have anything to solidify him as a guy that we really are excited to remember about.
Okay.
He's got Walk Like a Duck and Mansion in a Yacht. That's it. I'm Curious. Okay. That's it.
All right.
Really?
All right. You heard it here, guys. I don't have as passionate of a thought on Curious. I think it's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. That's what you say to somebody when you ask them, are you mad? No, it's fine.
Nice.
That's what you do. That's Curious right
All
there.
Right. So there you go. Moving on to our next album, we're going to another sophomore success or slump. Very iconic rapper from New Jersey that is a favorite of me and you. I think we both agree that this guy is a top tier MC. I don't know if he's in your top 10. He's probably in my top 10 or at least top 20 rappers of all time. It's Reggie Noble, aka Red Man, and the album is There Is a Dark Side. This was released November 22nd, 1994 on Def Jam Columbia.
I like Redman.
I like Redman a lot.
Always have. He's a guy that can evolve with the times.
Oh, yeah.
Great voice.
Great voice.
Delivery, the whole package, yeah. The character that he
is.
Sense
of humor.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's never really taken any type of dip. Everything he's done has been okay for him.
Yeah.
Trying to stay relevant in the 2000s is fine.
I think what happened here is what the album, right? We can both agree that's a classic.
Yeah.
We talked about it in past episodes.
Yeah.
We both thought that it's like a 4.5 to 5 mic album. Like it's pretty awesome. Redman really had his shoes filled because that was such a critically acclaimed album all around. To follow it up, There's a Dark Side. There was so much hype surrounding this.
Oh, of course.
It's really hard. It was really tough for him to follow up. Even he said that the pressure was so high with making this album. He was addicted to drugs the whole time he's making this album.
I don't doubt it. Well, look at this song. This was the first single,
right?
This was the first single, Rockefeller.
Right?
What did he dramatically do? He slowed it down.
Right.
What was the first songs of Redman?
Yeah, time for some action.
Blow your mind. Yeah. Hype party songs.
Right.
Now we're going into the slower gangster West Coast kind of thing, which was, if it's the record company telling him to do this, Was it Eric Sermon who produced this?
Eric Sermon. Well, actually, this album was shocking because Redman handled most of the tracks, and then only five tracks were produced or co-produced by Eric Sermon, right. And one song was done by Rockwilder. So it was like mainly Redman doing this. I think this song is Redman and Eric Sermon co-producing, I think. Like, co-production.
Okay.
But I think, he really wanted to, I think, have a little bit more control of this album. But I also think that maybe that's what drove him into drugs and the pressure. Stress. And he had to hit a deadline, probably. They're like, this is the holiday album, you know? Like,
stress.
Yep.
When this came out, it was a dramatic turn. It was a dramatic turn musically from him.
It was a polarizing album at the time. I remember some guys were like, I don't like it as much.
Yeah, because it was totally... It still has the funk that Eric Sermon likes to do.
Right.
But it's now the Dr. Dre style funk.
Right.
The slower
and
funk.
And it's a darker album.
The
album's called There Is a Dark Side. But thematically, it is a pretty dark album. More skits, more of that schizophrenic. He has the other voice in his head talking to him shit, right?
And that's not going to be marketable. How are you going to market that?
Well,
you know?
That's why the second single... Can't wait. Seemed like, wow, it was like, it almost stood out. It was kind of weird, right? Because it was like, it didn't fit in. It was so radio friendly.
Right.
It kind of like, the rest of the album is so like muddy and funky and dark. And then this is like the poppiest song.
And this was a great song
for him.
This
is the biggest hit.
Right. So... I don't know. I mean, clearly in the intro for this song, it's a radio listener calling the radio station saying, I want to hear Can't Wait.
Right.
Clearly telling everybody, okay, this is our radio song, everybody. Ready? Here it comes. Because everything else, Redman's all fucked up. But we saved the radio song for you. So this is it. Okay. Here it is. And then what? After that, what was the other single that came out of this album? That was it.
That was it. It was Rockefeller and Can't Wait. That was it. And those two music videos, two singles, and that was it.
They made their money off of Can't Wait, and then like, okay, pull the plug, move on to the next one.
The album actually got pretty... I hardly found any bad reviews for this album, and it was a commercial success. It debuted number 13 on the Billboard Pop Charts. So that's how big Redman was in 94.
Yeah.
And it was number one on Billboard Rap Charts.
Okay.
And it went gold. It sold 500,000 copies.
Okay.
So shit, it was a success. But do people remember this album? Like, I don't think they do, really. You know, when they think of Redman, they think of two albums, I think. They think of What the Album, and they think of Muddy Waters. Am I wrong?
No, I agree.
Or Dox the Name 2000, but...
No, I don't give a shit. Well, here's the thing, though, that we got of the hip hop consumer that I don't think we've talked about yet. Whenever you see a Billboard pop chart, a hip hop album make the Billboard pop chart and debut high, 10, number 2, number 1,
right.
What is their week 2 sales?
Mm.
It dramatically drops.
Yeah. Right.
What happens for the hip hop fan? They buy it just out of anticipation. It's the original hype beast.
Yeah.
Week 1, let's all buy it when it comes out. And then after that, we're going to give it to our friends to borrow. And we're maybe just going to sell it back to Jellies. And then week 2 comes. Oh, it was number 1. Oh, number 8 now? Wow, that was a big drop. And that's all of these albums. Because hip-hop people are cheap motherfuckers. So they're going to give it to their friend to dub over and dub over and dub over. Sales drop. So Redman living
for
off
him,
the popularity.
For him to sell 500,000. To go
huge.
Gold in the 90s, I don't think people understand how much of a big deal that is.
That's huge for
him. It's an accomplishment.
So based off of his persona, his previous album.
But you know what gold meant, right? You know what gold was code for, right? White people like it. Because they were buying it.
Yes.
And he was a rapper that was cool to like. And he was also that guy that I noticed that people would say like, oh yeah, I like hip-hop. I like Redman.
Right. There's nothing wrong about him that you can find that's... Like his personality, nobody's going to be like, gosh, I don't like Redman. I can't stand Redman. And that's never said. Because people like this guy because he's funny, he's tough, he's got it all. So that appeal drew to the 500,000 copies. It drew to him being number 13 on the pop chart. What was week two of him on the pop chart? Did he drop to 30?
I didn't keep track of it. I just was shocked that he made it to the top 13,
right,
being who he is. That's a big achievement.
That's it?
That's a big achievement.
So, yeah, I mean, as far as this album goes, there's a lot of misfires.
Do you have fond memories? I think the album's uneven.
Yeah.
I think it's uneven.
Very much so.
Lot of
Rockefeller. Rockefeller and Can't Wait are the best songs still.
You like the singles the best. Which is not always the best sign of an album when the singles are the best songs on the album.
Right, right. So that's why I can say that this album probably was sold back a lot. If you go to the bargain bin, you're going to see this. You're going to the UCD bin, you're going to see this.
You'll never see a What the Album in there.
No.
Yeah.
You'll see this. And it's based off of people liking What the Album.
So Redman went on a interview, a hip-hop interview show. He says he never performs almost any song off this album because he said it was the most depressing time of his life.
Well, that's an indicator.
So he said, I don't even perform Rockefeller Can't Wait at his live shows, he said, because he doesn't perform almost anything from There Is a Dark Side. But he says his fan base always requests songs from this album. So go figure. I don't know.
I can see people requesting Can't Wait.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Rockefeller is fine. It's decent.
Yeah. I liked it when it came out. I was ready for the album.
Yeah. After that, it's all filler. I don't remember any of it.
Yeah. This is Cosmic Slop.
Okay, still. Right. Then you had like these people, like the Twins. They were on there, right?
Right, right, right.
Not the
Hurricane
Twins.
Hurricane G is on there. Right. And right. Eric Sermon's on there.
So it's filler. It's fine. Would I listen to this now? I would listen to the two singles and that's it.
Okay. What did the source give this album?
They're on Redman's Jock, so I'm going to say 4.
They gave it 4 mics.
Yeah.
And for you personally, sophomore success or slump?
Gonna have to go with a slump.
For you?
Yeah. Because he was coming off something big.
Yeah.
Success-wise, he made it.
You're coming off an undisputed classic.
And he's an iconic character, Redman is. So I gotta say slump.
Okay. I don't think the album is bad. It's not bad at all. I just think you're coming off of one of the best albums of the 90s.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of pressure on him. Yeah. I felt like maybe he was probably rushed to do this album because there is a lot of songs that sound the same.
Yeah.
The beat and the tempo is all the same. There isn't a lot of diversity of sonically in this album. So
there's no fast songs in this.
I'm gonna agree with you. I don't want to call it a slump, but it is kind of a notch down from What the Album for sure. All right.
Pretty much, that sums it up. Yeah.
All right, we're at 42-minute mark. Do we got time for one more album, or do you want to call it a day? We're both working, guys.
This is like Saul here. Make a choice. Because, one, I would like to know what the album is. But, two, that will determine what if we continue this or not.
Okay.
So,
I don't know how
to answer that. Oh, I forgot about this.
It will be our last Treasure or Trash debut conversation. It's a group comprised of New York and Virginia rappers. They're called the Boogie Monsters. Do you want to talk about this, or should we save this for the next episode?
Wow, how's that a teaser for everybody, huh? Let's do something we haven't done before.
Okay.
Let's let them wait.
Oh.
So that's what we're starting next week's show. Is with this.
We'll be talking about Riders of the Storm from Boogie Monsters.
We've never done that before, so let's see what kind of
cliffhanger.
A cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who'd have thought Boogie Monsters would be used as a cliffhanger anywhere in life?
Never.
So there you have it, people. Enjoy.
All right. Yeah. Well, always appreciate you chatting with me, man, and we will see you guys next week.
And this is what's starting it.